Hi, my name is James Chappell. I am an associate professor of history at Duke University, and I'm here to talk about a book I've recently written called Golden Years, which is about the American invention and reinvention of old age in the 20th century. So I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book, which I really do think has a lot to teach us about the world that we live in. The first is that population aging is one of the biggest historical transformations of our time. You know, we all think a lot about population aging. We think about it as an issue for medicine and for finance, but I think we don't usually think about it historically. And I do think that from the broadest perspective, population aging is one of the biggest changes that has happened to American society in the past century. We usually think about politics or iPhones or AI or whatever it is, but I think that those things matter less than these major demographic changes. Human life is not what it was a century ago. It's twice as long. And I think that that matters more than particular pieces of technology we might use, for instance. And so I think that population aging is one of the most important historical transformations of our time that deserves a lot of historical attention and much more than it's gotten. The second key insight is that it's a little bit the opposite of the first. I was somewhat surprised myself to find that we've only been thinking very hard about population aging for a century, which is not very long. Most of the major things that we try to deal with as a society, things like education, politics, health, war, gender, we've been thinking about these things for centuries. There's a lot of reflection in the philosophical tradition, in the Christian tradition, in all kinds of different traditions. But population aging, no one really paid attention to it until about the 1930s. Even people like Karl Marx, even people who are thinking very hard about social reform and progress, aren't thinking about aging at all. So aging has a history, but it's a pretty short history. And if we're thinking about it as an object of real reflection about what to do with old age, how to pay for old age. And I think that actually makes it pretty exciting because there's a lot of vibrancy in this space and a lot of creativity. I think because it's been an object of reflection for such a short time. The third key insight I want to bring to the table is that there have been many different approaches to aging, even in this country. I think we often think of aging as something non-ideological. Like, of course, the education system is ideological. Of course, the military is ideological. These are all things that we debate about and have robust public debate about what is the meaning of these things. But old age is kind of like, well, you get Social Security and Medicare, and we don't want to think about it too much beyond that. And that might be what it looks like now. And that's a story I do tell in the book, is how we got to this moment of kind of ideological stasis. But for most of the last century, there's been a ton of debate about what it means to age well, socially and politically and justly. So there has been socialist forms of aging, conservative forms of aging, green or eco-conscious forms of aging. One tradition I look at, I mean, there's been a lot of interest in this country since George Floyd in critical race theory, in kind of Black Americans, in racial justice. And from that perspective, the history of aging looks quite different. There actually was a robust tradition of Black thought about aging. I spent a chapter reviving the National Caucus and the Black Aged in a lot of really inspiring Black leaders who said, essentially, racism and prejudice follows Americans through the life course. Older Black Americans have all kinds of negative outcomes, and they had specific reforms suggested to bring the insights of the civil rights movement into old age politics and into old age policy. And I think that one of the key things about the present is to reinvigorate and repoliticize old age. And so I think that remembering how political it was and how divisive it was, and therefore how exciting it was to think and debate about old age just a few decades ago, feels to me like a really important insight. The fourth key inside of the book is twofold. The solutions we arrived at to deal with old age in the 20th century are very good. Historians are often quite down on American history. They tend to focus on the persistence of inequality or of violence or of disenfranchisement. But when it comes to old age, you know, the situation is so much better than it was a century ago. A century ago, older people were living often in squalor in one-room shacks with dirt cottages. There weren't very many of them because public health was so bad. Now, older people are quite economically privileged and they have access to the best poverty reduction program in the country, which is Social Security. They're the only age bracket that has something like socialized medicine through Medicare. And so there's a lot to be grateful for as Americans as we age. But there's also a lot left to be done. One of the main things the book does is show the failures of the old age movement and of old age policy, especially when it comes to what we call the old, those over 80, issues of frailty, nursing home care, things like that. We all know, it's in our own lives, what a catastrophe the American approach to this is, and how many middle-aged couples, especially women, are financially or emotionally devastated by caring for older relatives. One thing the book shows is that this was a policy decision. It could have been taken differently. It should have been taken differently. There are approaches that were on the table that would have made this much better than it is now. And it's not too late. So I think that when we think historically about old age, it's important to me that we tell a basically optimistic story. It is an optimistic story. I'm excited to get old, that there are way more social programs for me when I'm 65 than I have now. But there's also room for growth. And I think given what I said in my first insight about the importance of population aging, that room for growth, especially dealing with policy for the old and about nursing homes and extended care, is going to be one of the most important policy arenas of the near future. And the last thing I want to say is that key insight, which some listeners might already know, but some won't, is that getting old is an adventure. Now, when I say that, I recognize it sounds like pablum, like something that would be on the, I don't know, a poster that shows old people playing tennis or something like that. I do mean that. It's true that I want people, listeners, to know that old age in America can be very good. It can be very fun. You have access to so much when it comes to opportunities for leisure and health and all these different things. But I mean something different by it. What I mean is this. I think as Americans, we tend to believe we make our biggest contributions as citizens when we're young, that politics is a young person's game, that green energy, Black Lives Matter, whatever it is, these things are movements for younger people that we hope will kind of drag America into the 21st century. And old people can kind of step back. We made our mark. Maybe we opposed, you know, the Iraq war, and like that was our moment to be political, and now we can step back. And I think that is absolutely not true. That is a completely outdated way to think about American politics. I think the age of youth has been eclipsed. There are now more older people in America than there are younger ones. The decisions we make about how to age and to think about old age policy are going to matter now more than ever. And being provocative, I might even say that decisions about aging and old age policy are going to matter more than decisions about youth, because I think the age of the youth is over. There's been a major demographic transition in this country and in many others. And so as we age, we should not think of ourselves as becoming less relevant. We should think of ourselves as becoming more relevant. So those are some of the key insights of my book, which is called Golden Years. It's a history book. It goes into more detail about all of this and much more. I tell lots of individual stories about people getting older and those who cared for them. I talk about some forgotten movements in the history of old age activism, including the Black movements I mentioned, but also others. So I do hope that you are able to give it a read. And either way, I hope you enjoyed listening. And thank you for that.